Nice. Nice. Although you guys always shine, with or without lights, you guys just shine. It's very, very nice. Very nice. Thank you. And look at us, Howard. We can see over here. I know. It's just, wow. It's an unusual. So, yes, and I do know it's warm. We try to move things on the best we can. The lights are fixed. AC is still $200,000 away, but, you know, we got to take this one time, not $200,000, $120,000 away, and we get that and we'll be all set. So some of you may remember Muhammad Ali. Yes. Muhammad Ali, heavyweight champion, great fighter, used to go around with the label the greatest. All right. And there's a great story told one time. So here he is, you know, all being the greatest and everything. He gets on the airplane and, you know, they all get on there and he's in first class because he's Muhammad Ali and all of that happening. And stewardess gets on and says, okay, you know, there's the emergency exits. Here's the life vest, you know, fasten your seatbelts and all of that. And then she goes to check it out. Well, Muhammad Ali don't have a seatbelt checked. And she said, you know, hey, excuse me, sir, you know, you need to put on your seatbelt. And Muhammad Ali says, Superman don't need no seatbelt. And she answers without missing a beat, Superman don't need no airplane. Yeah. Buckle up. Okay. The truth is, you know, we would like to be more humble, but the problem is nobody would notice, right? Have you ever noticed that? I heard this great thing for men about pride, all right? Pride is like a beard. It grows all the time. The solution is to shave every day. You think about that, all right? Our pride has a tendency to just grow and grow and grow. We read the scriptures today. When you heard Andrea read it, you saw it on the screen. There is Mark, the Gospel of Mark. God bless him. I mean, you have to love the Gospel writer Mark because no matter how bad you feel about your discipleship, you can always count on Mark to show you somebody who's dumber. You ever notice that? No matter how much you flunk the class, all right, there's always somebody who has a lower grade. And in the Gospel of Mark, that's the disciples. All right. No matter how bad we go at it, we can always say, well, at least we're not as bad as the disciples are, because they are really, really, really dumb. They are. If you ever want to feel good about yourself, read the Gospel of Mark. You're going to come away thinking, oh, my gosh, how did Jesus even make it with them? How did that even work? Because they just don't. You might remember that chapter earlier, Jesus had already gave them this lesson. Now he's repeating the lesson. This is what it means to be the Messiah. It means I'm going to suffer. It means I'm going to die. You recall, last week we preached about that. Last week, well, I preached about it. You listened to it. And we went through the lesson, remember? And Peter says, no, no, no. And then Jesus calls him Satan. And then you get the whole lesson about how you have to deny yourself and pick up a cross. And now Jesus is on the lesson again. I'm going to suffer. I'm going to die. And the disciples this time, we're not saying anything. No, 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 no. We remember what happened the last time we had a question about that. The last time Peter got called Satan. The last time Jesus gives this big lecture about how you have to deny yourself and pick up a cross. Who wants to do that? That doesn't sound like fun. So this time they say, you know, we're not going to talk to him about it. Nope, nope, nope. We're just not going to talk about it. Let's talk about something more exciting, like which one of us is best. So they get this little competition going between themselves about who, well, it can't be Peter. He's stupid. Even Jesus called him Satan. What chance does he have of being first? It isn't going to happen. He sank like a rock when he tried it. No, he's not going to be, you know, and they're going back and forth about who's the bride. They finally get to the house, and there's Jesus, and he says, okay, what were you talking about? Nobody's talking to Jesus. Have you noticed that in this passage? Nobody's talking to Jesus because they already know they shouldn't have been doing that. You ever been doing something that you knew you shouldn't have been doing, and then somebody wants to know what you were doing? And your brain freezes up. Your mouth can't come up with a good excuse. And you go, oh, look, squirrel. Look at that. Did you see that? There's a squirrel. And you just try to distract people with something else. And it's difficult. It's so difficult sometimes. We get caught up in what we think we know and what we think is important, like what we think about greatness, what we think greatness is about, and sometimes we forget it. We get all locked up into false visions and false ways that we think it's supposed to be happening. There was a movie out a long time ago. It was way back when Bruce Willis had hair. Okay? So Bruce Willis has hair, and it's not an action-adventure movie. He's not blowing anybody up. It's like a Disney type of movie. So, you know, it's a long time ago, and it's called The Kid. It's not a good movie. I'm not recommending it, but there was this cute scene in it. All right? So Bruce Willis, as an adult, okay, lives in a really nice house, contemporary house, big, fancy house. He's an image consultant, you know, very successful with what he does, but his life is an empty life. And in this movie, his name is Russ. So he comes home, and there's this little kid named Rusty. Rusty is 8 years old, and Rusty is acting like he owns the house. And Russ is like, who the heck are you? I don't know anything about it. This is unusual. And during the course of the movie, it becomes apparent to him that Rusty is actually Russ when he was 8 years old. But it's taking it a while for him to connect all the dots. But in the meantime, he opens up the door. The little kid comes running into his house. Think about that. Comes running in. Can you imagine your 8-year-old self coming running into your house and you don't know that it's you? You know, and so he's running through the house, and he's yelling, Chester, 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 where are you, Chester? Hey, Chester, it's it. And Russ is like, what are you doing? Quit yelling. You know, he's not with kids. You know, they only have one volume. And quit yelling. Quit yelling. Who's Chester? And the kid looks at him like he's an idiot. He said, Chester's the dog. He's the world's best dog. He's the dog I'm going to have when I grow up. And Russ looks at him and goes, there ain't no dog here. He says, we don't have a dog? And he goes, no, I don't have time to take care of a dog. I'm traveling all the time. You fly jets. This is awesome. I'm going to grow up to fly jets. This is great. I just knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. No. I ride in jets. I don't fly the jet. What do? I'm an image consultant. You can imagine how excited an 8-year-old is to hear that. So he looks around the room, and he says, shouldn't there be a lady here, a woman here? And Russ goes, you mean like a wife? He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm not married. And the kid just looks at him with this look like, let me get this straight. I'm almost 40 years old. I don't have a dog. I don't fly jets, and I'm not married? Pops on the couch. I grow up to be a loser. How we measure greatness to that 8-year-old not having a dog. You don't fly. You grow up to be a loser. I'm going to end up being a loser. This is the way it gets measured. And that's what Jesus comes in with the disciples. He's trying to tell them, you're measuring yourself the wrong way. Jesus is talking about suffering and they're thinking about status. And Jesus is trying to let them know, status isn't ranked the way you think it is. In fact, he brings a child before them. Now, we were talking about this in Bible study. There is no way for me to help you identify how unusual it would have been for Jesus to put a child before the disciples as an example of low status. See, in our culture, we love children. Children are great. We have worship and wonder. We have children's sermon. We have pictures of our children. We talk. We don't have children. We talk about grandchildren. We talk about somebody else's children. Children are great. We're all precious about children. But back in those days, children were lower than slaves. In fact, normally I don't like that translation, but the NRSV, the New Revised Standard Version, actually gets it right. When it says that Jesus takes a child and puts the child before him, he calls the child an it. Place the translation reads, and he places it before them. You can't get lower on a totem pole than an it. It's not a he places him before. No, no, no. Places an it before. This is lower than lower than low. That's the object lesson Jesus is trying to give to the disciples about status and about what it means to be a disciple. That it has nothing to do with the way we think of success and nothing to do with the way we think of greatness. It has everything to do with serving. It has everything to do not with being high, but with being low, at the bottom. There. That's where you belong. That's what it means to be a disciple. And so many times it's difficult to do that. Even it's hard in society. It's harder in the church. Way back in the day, I used to go to general assemblies and regional assemblies and district assemblies and this church convention and that church convention. And guess what? The thing you always suspected is true. Ministers' egos are unbelievably large. It is true. You go to these conferences and it's like you had to have them in an outdoor stadium because nobody's ego could fit in. It's just like, oh my gosh, all they do is measure themselves against each other. How large is your church? How many do you have in your worship attendance? How much money do you have? How many people did you baptize? Just on and on and on and on, as if somehow that's the measure of our faithfulness. We're measuring our faithfulness with these kind of numbers, rather than thinking in terms of service and humility. We get all wrapped up in how we think about status. Remember the movie Lion King? Remember that? With Simba? And Simba's singing the song there with Nala? Oh, I just can't wait to be king. And he's got it in his head what it's going to be like when he gets to be the king. Remember how that song unfolds? And he's got this wonderful vision. That's good. No more saying do this. No more saying do that. You know, I just can't wait. I'm going to be king. I'm going to be in charge. Everybody's got to do what I say. And Mufasa, his father, is trying to tell him that is not what it means to be a king. What it means to be a king is to look after everyone. What it means to be a king is to be the servant of everyone. What it means to be a king is that you protect those who are most vulnerable. What it means to be a king. And Jesus here trying to tell the disciples what it means to be a disciple. And it isn't about ranking up on a ladder. It's about washing feet. It's about serving others. It's about not counting ourselves so important that we dismiss other people. Humility isn't about thinking less of ourselves. It's about thinking less of ourselves. You hearing the difference? We think of ourselves less and think of the other more. In order to be able to serve, and able to help, in order, what can I, instead of what can you do for me, what can I do for you? How can I help you understand how much God loves you? How can I make God's grace more visible before you? How can I serve God by serving the children of God? That's what it means to be a disciple. That's the example that Jesus led. That's what he shows us time and time again in Scripture. What it means to be a servant. S.I. McMillan has this great little story about a young woman applying for college. And she comes across the question, are you a leader? And she thinks about the question and she prays about the question, and out of truthfulness, she writes on the application, no, I'm not. And she mails in the application, but she knows that that's not the right answer. And she's surprised when she gets back from the university, telling her that she's been accepted. And in that statement of acceptance, it said, this year we received 1,452 people who say they're going to be leaders. You're the only one who said they'd be a follower. Someone's going to have to follow them. Jesus isn't looking to call us to be a leader. He's calling us to be a follower. And if we're going to follow him, then he's very upfront about what it means. It means suffering. It means denying ourselves, death to ourselves. It means trusting ourselves and turning our will over completely to God. Trusting him to raise us to a new life. A life filled with new visions and possibilities. A life about service, to be for sure. But a life that is fulfilled. A life that has meaning. A life that has purpose. Jesus isn't calling us to success. He's calling us to faithfulness. And he's looking for those who will follow. Will you? Will you follow Jesus? God bless you.